up, speak, speak, up, speak, speak, up, up, speak, speak, up, speak, up, speak, up,
speak, up,
speak, speak, up.
You're listening to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. We're the campus and community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast from unceded Coast Salish territories.
This is... wrong mic.
Hello, hello. Sorry, I had the wrong mic going there. This is not Jesse today, but actually Danny Nesvetterani, your community journalist for CJSF, who is now going to be taking on the Tuesday Speak Up. So I'm very excited to be talking and speaking with all of you today. There are a few things going this hour. First, I want to acknowledge that we are on the unceded and ancestral lands of the Hukamilam speaking people who have been sharing and speaking and existing on these lands since time immemorial. And today we've got, you know, news stories, but we've also got a pretty long-form discussion between Jesse and I, because last week we attended the National Campus Community Radio Conference that happened in Nanaimo. And that was my first conference, and there was so much going on the entire time, so much that I learned, so many amazing people that I met, and I just felt like it didn't make sense if I didn't speak about it on radio, considering it was a radio conference and there was a lot to be learned. So stay tuned for that. But to start off today's episode, I want to play a piece all the way in Toronto. This piece is from Mia Johnson from Met Radio. It's titled "Ontario Law Could Spell Doom for Turtles in Toronto's Wetlands." It has to do with a law that passed that would speed up sort of development projects within the area. And I think this is a really cool piece because, well, for one, it's 16 minutes. And I think any sort of deep dive piece on sort of one specific topic is really, really cool. But it really goes into sort of the advocacy and human interest side of, you know, more legislative kind of bureaucratic government goings on. So I thought I would play it for all of you today. Once again, this is Danny Nesvetterani on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby for Speak Up. Thank you so much for tuning in.
Anger as government members vote in favor of Bill 5.
One of the worst proposed legislations in a generation for environmental protections.
There's hundreds of thousands of people stuck in their cars, and you're worried about a grasshopper jumping across the highway.
They're just goddamn trees.
Do we know the premier likes roads. Anytime there's a road, he wants more of it.
They're going to see a road that they never had.
When you look here on this hill, there's a lot of open areas. They tend to nest along the edges here at the bottom of the hill, but also in the open. So that way their nest gets heat from the sun to keep the nest warm.
Carolyn Crawley is scouting the ground looking for hatchlings, aka baby turtles.
They also prefer slopes that face either south or west.
Why is that?
And that's just for the sun, for the warmth.
It's common to find them this time of year in High Park.
We just got a call this morning in one of the parks that there was a hatchling that was coming out of a nest.
It is nesting season for the common snapping turtle and the Midland painted turtle who live here. Both are listed under the Ontario Endangered Species Act. We're standing on the same hill where the cherry blossoms bloom every year, facing the sun and the pond down below.
As we're looking outward, straight ahead, that's Grenadier Pond.
Carolyn claims the hill as Hatchling Hill, but they're hard to find as we walk, the hatchlings. Today, she doesn't find any while we're together. Hatchlings are small. The babies aren't much bigger than the size of a loonie. Carolyn is constantly looking at the ground while she moves. She is cautious of where she is stepping.
It takes about 60 years of egg laying to replace one adult turtle that has lost their life. I can't even imagine what those statistics would be with the passing of this bill.
Most people visiting the park don't know about the turtles. There's little signage around the site, besides the signs the organization has put up to warn visitors. In fact, most people don't know that the turtles of Toronto's wetlands exist at all. On that same day, a bill that pits global geopolitics and Ontario's economic future against the province's species was on the table. The turtles of Grenadier Pond were on the table. The debate was scathing.
No consent, no consultations, no laws. This is the playbook that this government is selling.
I was crystal clear about getting rid of the red tape, getting rid of the regulations.
After almost 2 months of negotiations, amendments, and protests, the bill passed third reading on June 4th, with 71 votes for it and 44 against.
The ayes being 71, the nays being 44, I declare the motion carried.
Bill 5, the Protecting Ontario by Unleashing Our Economies Act, allows the province to move along major infrastructure and resource extraction projects faster. The Ford government said this acceleration will help reduce delays and eliminate duplication in the approval process.
We're being held back by our own processes. We have the critical minerals the world needs and wants.
Ontario Premier Doug Ford says this is a step towards strengthening our economy, ensuring the development of these minerals, and edging our competitiveness as a sovereign country. But economic development is coming at the cost of endangered species across the province, and the turtles in Grenadier Pond are just one example.
With the threat of Bill 5, it reduces the protections of endangered species.
As a listed endangered species, both the snapping turtle and the Midland painted turtle's habitat is already fractured and fragile. 85% of wetlands have been destroyed and impacted in the city of Toronto, according to the Toronto Region and Conservation Authority. Turtles depend on these wetlands, but also the surrounding habitat for feeding, mating, and other life processes. That radius is small in the city. And because most people aren't aware of the turtles' presence, most end up getting crushed.
Turtles leave wetlands to come nest on land. Because of development, there have been roads that have been put in place between wetlands, or some wetlands have been completely buried. Turtles, often when they're crossing the roads, they're very slow moving, and that's one of the big threats to them.
Where is it common that you'd see turtles crossing the road? Are there wetlands that are closer to roads?
Yeah, so unfortunately, we have found a number of turtles dead on the Queensway. Here in High Park, a number of turtles hit on the road on Ellis Avenue. In Smythe Park, as you drive into that park, anywhere there's wetlands and there are roads, there's a risk to those beings. Even down by Etienne Brulé, we found one really old mama snapping turtle that was hit, and unfortunately, she didn't survive.
Under Bill 5, the Ontario's Endangered Species Act is replaced with a new law called the Species Conservation Act. The new act changes the definition of a habitat. Protections would only apply to the immediate area around an animal's den or nest. This doesn't cover traveling distances turtles take, with movements of 6 kilometers documented in some Ontario populations, or for landscapes surrounding the wetlands, where turtles scavenge and nest, like on Hatching Hill.
The Blandings turtle, who lives here in the city, they spend a lot of time on land. It's not considering their habitat as far as where they live, how they move from wetland to wetland, how they live on the land, how they forage on the land.
But to consider this, to take the time to assess this, holds up building and mining processes. And Ontario's Minister of Energy and Mines says time is of the essence right now. They're running the clock against the United States' continuous threats to the nation.
As you know, Ontario is facing unprecedented geopolitical challenges that are creating economic uncertainty at the hands of our biggest ally and trading partner. These unprovoked actions have put our workers and our businesses and our industries at risk, highlighting the urgent need for bold, decisive action. Energy and critical minerals are pivotal to the future of our province and our nation's prosperity.
Minister Stephen Lecce told the province 2 months ago when the bill was first introduced that approval processes are just taking too long.
Safeguarding Ontario's economic future is our top priority. To unlock that potential, we have to make this process easier because it cannot take up to 17 years to open a mine in the province.
Lecce says the new approach would help speed up project timelines and provide greater certainty for developers. They'll be able to begin an activity immediately after registering instead of waiting for the ministry's approval. Our station asked the Ontario Mining Association how they stood to benefit from the bill. The association's president, Priya Tandon, shared her thoughts in a statement. She told us she's supportive of the One Project, One Process initiative inside Bill 5. That's a framework where approvals are consolidated under one single process, rather than multiple permits for multiple industries on the same project. She told us she looks forward to working with the government to meet those timeline goals, but also is taking into account mining impacts on biodiversity and Indigenous communities through, quote, sustainable mining practices. We tried to reach out to four separate mining companies to hear their thoughts about the new legislation, but not a single one agreed to go on tape.
It's very draconian. It's the bill that that Donald Trump only dreams he could get through the U.S. Congress. It's the most fundamentally anti-democratic bill I've ever seen go through the Ontario legislature. It's catastrophic in nature.
Tim Gray is the executive director of Environmental Defense. Our station spoke with him less than an hour after the bill's passing. He spent the last 25 years developing and implementing environmental policy change efforts.
No one who advocates for proper review is interested in that process taking a long time.
Gray says environmental impact assessments are in place for good reason, but did agree that improvements could be made around some of the bureaucracy of decision making.
You know, no one is going to object to that. It's the wholesale elimination of review processes and thinking that somehow there won't be a consequence of that and that this is a path forward that is sustainable and proper for Canadian society that is so fundamentally flawed.
He says collecting data on wildlife takes time to correctly assess and address the potential harm. Hatchling season happens only twice during the year in High Park. This is when the newborn turtles come out of their nest and make their way back to the water.
The whole point of it is to make good decisions. But sometimes it takes a while to collect data. For example, if you are examining the impacts of a new project on wildlife, for example, you can't do that. If you want to examine the impact on, say, the breeding season of a particular fish, you can only look at that fish during its breeding season. You don't know what it's doing, where it is, how many individuals are there. If you look in September, if it breeds in April. So you're going to have to take the time necessary to recognize the ecology of the system in order to collect data sufficient to make good recommendations and therefore decisions.
It's just not accurate to say that it's duplication. There's going to be major, major gaps in species protections.
Laura Bowman is a lawyer with EcoJustice Canada in Toronto. She represents environmental groups, First Nations, and community groups at all levels of court. Bowman works on judicial reviews. Her work centers around holding the government accountable for applying environmental laws or encouraging them to pass better ones. Wetlands protections in Ontario have already been compromised due to recent policy changes and legislation. The Ontario government rolled back protections for wetlands last year to prioritize housing and to add the removal of lands from the Greenbelt. Part of the criticism is the new legislation doesn't prioritize restoring these wetlands.
They amended the wetland evaluation system that identified provincially significant wetlands, which were subject to pretty strong protections under provincial planning laws. The planning laws have been eroded. The wetlands evaluation system has been eroded. It's now possible for any private consultant to undermine a wetland designation and eliminate those protections simply by filing a report, whether the report is any good or scientifically robust or not.
Under the old act, an independent advisory body made up of scientists make recommendations to the government on listed species who are endangered when a project is moving forward. Now, under the new act, it is discretionary whether the minister lists the species and chooses to advise.
For endangered species that are in wetlands, we're not going to see the kinds of preventative measures that were being put in place under the Endangered Species Act, because that act would require things like tunnels under a road that turtles could use. It would require things like moving things away from places that we knew that turtles were moving. You know, Ontario's turtle species were all regulated under that act, and now it'll be as simple as just telling the government you plan to kill turtles, and you'll be authorized to do that.
The other thing about Bill 5, which is very critical impact, is the impact upon Indigenous rights. The governments have a responsibility to consult. They have that duty to consult with Indigenous communities in regards to anything that's happening upon the land. And this bill is going to accelerate development and almost ignore that.
Special economic zones is another proposal under this bill that went through. Within designated zones, companies and projects can be exempted from having to comply with a provincial law, provincial regulation, or a municipal bylaw. And this isn't limited to just environmental laws. This could be any law.
There are no limits in the bill, and there's no limit to what laws, provincial laws, they can be exempt from or why. It's not limited to mining as a purpose. It's not limited to mines as in terms of its application. And it could be used to exempt projects from human rights law. It could be used to exempt projects from property laws, labor relations legislation for collective bargaining, employment standards. That could mean really anything at all.
I think it's really important for people to understand that as Indigenous peoples, we have a responsibility to be in this reciprocal relationship with the land, because the land is constantly giving to us.
Carolyn Crawley co-founded Turtle Protectors in 2022, an Indigenous and volunteer-led organization keeping at-risk turtles safe in the city's wetlands.
No, I don't believe that's the end of it, because it's just like the Greenbelt. That bill had passed and people spoke up and stood up against it, and the Ford government had to reverse that bill.
It's not clear how many turtles are still alive, but preserving damaged habitats and assisting with fertility practices is the only way the population can be maintained.
In teachings that I carry that have been shared with me growing up, as well as elders in my life currently and at ceremony, is that all life is sacred and all life has purpose. And in all the creation stories, whether you're religious, spiritual, or believe in evolution, Mother Earth was here before the arrival of humans. So we know all these beings can thrive without us. But there is not one human being that can survive without this relationship. Through Indigenous ways of being a relationship, we're all sitting in that circle together. And it's humans that are more dependent upon all the other relatives and relationships. So we really need to be thinking about, what are those impacts going to be? And we say that turtle is the founder, right? Because turtle found us, and we are guided by turtles.
This episode was produced by the Local Journalism Initiative. The clip you heard about trees and pagan voodoo is from the original 2009 Avatar. I'm Mia Johnson, local journalist at Met Radio CJTM 1280 AM in downtown Toronto.
Thank you so much, Mia Johnson, for that piece. If you want to hear more of her pieces, or my pieces, or Jesse's pieces, or so many other news segments from so many amazing radio journalists across Canada, you can find them on frequencynews.ca. Coming up next, we have an interview that I did actually a couple weeks ago. This one is with the mayor of Burnaby, Mike Hurley, on his mayoral task force on economic growth and resilience. And I wanted to play this interview again just because I think it really exemplifies what we've been able to do through the local journalism initiative here at CJSF. You know, back in October, there wasn't really a designated news person at the station. And even though I filled that role, now, you know, we have things like weekly editorial meetings, weekly check-ins to make sure that everyone kind of has things going on and, you know, suggesting ways that others can support. So that's been a big help. And I feel like lately when I've talked to people about certain interviews I'm doing, I've gotten this question of how did you interview the mayor? How did that work? And you just ask. Obviously, you know, I have the title of journalist and I am backed by the station, but it really is as simple as sending an email to their office and getting a reply. And at this point, we've made some really great relationships with the municipal governments that sort of neighbor CJSF. So that has been a huge, huge boon for the station. Anyways, here is my interview with Mayor Mike Hurley. Reporting from Burnaby, BC, this is Danny Nesvedarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM, Burnaby. At the 2025 Burnaby State of the City Address on May 12th, Mayor Mike Hurley announced the formation of a new mayor's task force on Burnaby economic growth and resilience. According to the mayor, sorry about that. The audio for this piece actually just sort of crapped out on me, but I will play it once more for all of you.
Reporting from Burnaby, BC.
This task force will help us capitalize and build on those strengths, end quote. While the intent behind the task force has been made clear, CJSF decided to reach out to Mayor Mike Hurley for an interview on the topic, to give him the opportunity to name some of the specifics regarding the task force goals and desired impact on the city of Burnaby.
Well, first of all, I've been looking at our economic strategy for quite a while, and it's frankly been a bit outdated. And so I was considering doing something else, but along with the tariffs and everything else we're now facing, I figured it was a great time to get key leaders in our community together to discuss what we can do. And Burnaby's very successful, but what can we do to be even more successful at this time? And to start to chart a path forward, not just right now, but chart a path forward for where we will be going in the future. So,
Mayor Hurley then went on to specify the main focus of the task force.
The task force will be more related to because we have done a lot of different task force on affordability and homelessness and housing. We've done those task force and we've charted a pretty good path forward on those. But I think this is strictly economic to look at how we can attract more businesses, how we can ensure that the businesses we have are remaining successful and remaining competitive. And, you know, those are kind of some of the key things. But we need to be very resilient at this time and to be very focused on what we can do and forget about the noise on the outside. It has to be what we can do to be better and to make ourselves more competitive and resilient.
In this response, Mayor Hurley mentions the noise on the outside. We asked him if this noise that he's referring to has anything to do with Canada's current economic relations with the United States.
Well, there's no question that you can't ignore that. That is a fact. But even before this and during COVID and at other times in our history, I think that Canada needs to now learn to stand on its own 2 feet more and rely less on sending some work that we should be doing here overseas to get it done, what we feel is cheaper, but I don't believe it's cheaper in the long run. I think there's a big price that gets paid for that. So I think there's tremendous opportunity there here if we look at it, at the resources we have in this country.
So far, Mayor Hurley has explained that the main goal of this task force on Burnaby economic growth and resilience will be to create a list of deliverables to be implemented that will increase business investment within the city. We asked if he was able to answer what type of businesses he had in mind.
Well, you know, Burnaby's a big hub for high-tech and for, you know, the biosciences. And so we hope to stay there. It's also a big hub for the movie industry. So we'll be very focused on those because those are the big employers.
Lastly, we asked Mayor Mike Hurley why residents of Burnaby should look forward to this mayoral task force on economic resilience and growth in Burnaby. Why should people care?
Well, I think they should be excited about it because this is the future of our city. You know, it's the future of all our residents that we're dealing with here. If we don't have financial stability, good jobs in our city, that affects everyone. We all know about the affordability issues as is, so we can't let that get worse. We have to start to improve it.
Once again, that was our conversation with Burnaby Mayor Mike Hurley on the upcoming mayoral task force on the city's economic growth and resilience. This has been Danny Nesvedarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. This segment would not have been possible without the continued support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada's Local Journalism Initiative. You can also find...
This is a bird note. I'm Nicole Jackson, an environmental educator and nature enthusiast. I want to take a moment to appreciate some of our most overlooked neighbors, the urban birds. You know, pigeons, geese, gulls... species that often get a bad rap among city dwellers, but these cosmopolitan birds are worthy of admiration too. Pigeons, often called rats with wings, are actually remarkable navigators. They were used to deliver crucial messages during wars. Their resilience in bustling cities is a testament to their adaptability. And what about gulls? While they may seem pesky at beaches and parking lots, gulls help control insect populations and scarf down food waste. Geese, though sometimes confrontational, are devoted parents and help maintain green spaces by grazing on grass and weeds. By thriving in urban areas, birds remind us that nature is adaptable. Yet they still face many of the same environmental challenges as people do, like pollution and climate change. So, how can we show appreciation for our feathered friends? Start by respecting their space and supporting local conservation efforts. Because they're not just birds. They're part of what makes our cities vibrant. For Bird Note, I'm Nicole Jackson.
All right, we are back with Speak Up, only on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. You had just heard a little bit of a bird note, and before that, my interview with Mayor Mike Hurley on the Mayoral Task Force on Burnaby Economic Growth and Resilience. So if you live within the Burnaby area, hopefully you learned a little bit more about this new task force, because that was a big driving force behind why I wanted to do that interview. And that's a big driving force behind a lot of my pieces, is that I just want to learn more and share that with others within the community. So thank you for listening. Before we get into the conversation on the National Community Campus Radio Conference that happened in Nanaimo with our very own Jesse Wensloff, I am going to be playing a song by Vancouver band Bloom Effect. This song is called Armor. It's a bit of sort of alternative dream pop, shoegaze, maybe post-punk. There's a lot going on, and I hope you enjoy it this morning.